It's a check-in with State Representative Jackie Chan time for the first time in June of 2022. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Joe. It's good to see you. Happy June, which is also Happy Pride Month, which is also Father's Day month. You know, supposedly the unofficial start of summer was this past weekend, Memorial Day. So I hope everyone had a wonderful Memorial Day, both enjoying time with family and also remember those who serve our country that have passed and celebrate their lives in memory. And isn't June also the equinox month coming up?
I think that is June 21st, actually. Yes. Yep.
So yeah, June's a busy day. And also congratulations to Quincy High, North Quincy High graduates, which I think is next week.
It is indeed next Monday and Tuesday at Veterans Stadium. Will you be there?
I haven't seen my email yet. Normally I get an email 10 days out. I should check my junk mail again, but I will be there. I just have not received, I presume the structures hasn't changed. I mean, doing this for 10 years, same operating procedure,
yeah.
I would presume.
That's the information I have. It is the same. It's 6 o'clock in the evening at the stadium for, I believe, North is on Monday night, then Quincy High on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and I want to congratulate my nephew, Justin, for graduating Quincy High School. He's going to be on Tuesday night. So I shall be there, obviously, winter, depending on the weather conditions. But, you know, last year was the first year we got to do it in person graduation in a full set of circumstances, not a limited outdoor crowd. And it was just great to see the kids and listen to their speeches about the world today and moving forward.
Yeah, and of course, congratulations going out to Quincy College, just held their commencement exercises, and the governor was their keynote speaker.
Yeah, and Rick DeCristofaro is continuing to do a good job over there. As we know, they've gone through several presidents in the last 4 years, and Rick has a strong education background, being the superintendent of schools, also obviously master's of education, I'll say taught in schools, mind you, it was K through 12. However, you know, on hand, teaching experience does matter. Managing this very political bureaucracy, again, no different from some ways running a public school, but also a little bit different. I mean, he has to raise his own money as opposed to receiving funds from the state and the local level set by the mayor and the school committee and the city council. So, you know, that's a bit of a change. And also, you know, keeping enrollment, he has to find customers, so to speak,
yep,
as opposed to a captured audience and school children.
That's right. Speaking of, seeing what we're talking about it, I know that the state budget includes a hefty increase for the Quincy Public School, well, for public schools in general, but certainly for Quincy.
Oh, yes. The historical education reform change we did at the very end of last session, we did a lot of stuff during COVID 2020, including education funding. You know, it bumped up every community. So I think Quincy got up another, I think, 8-ish million more. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. So this is a significant bump. And, you know, I do like to remind folks that just local aid, which is unrestricted, do anything you want money, as well as education money, you know, amounts closing in the 50 million zone. So, you know, the budget's 370. And so, I mean, the state continues to be a very strong partner on helping the city budgets. And this does not include things like, you know, the library, cultural council, school breakfast, which we have made school breakfast post-COVID, post-emergency COVID, a permanent feature of our school systems in Massachusetts, as well as many other programs that the state applies for grants for and direct earmarks. For example, you know, thanks to the speaker, $50,000 goes to Quincy Fire for hazmat equipment and training. So, you know, I think people sometimes forget exactly how involved the state is on the city budget as well as local service agencies, because obviously you all see the city budget and assume it's all your local property taxes. No, state property taxes, lottery money also goes in. And because we're such a big community, it's cross-subsidization. So since it's statewide money, you're actually getting back a little more than a smaller community would. Because
right,
we're in the community. Same thing with Chapter 90 money, which is roads and bridge monies, which the city's going to get about $1.9 million-ish, plus some extras and special projects they have to apply for. But again, we're a bigger city. We're going to get a whole lot more money in a small town like Peru or Orange or Belcher Town, some of these small communities, especially in Western Mass, where their tax dollars in these small communities are actually subsidizing our larger cities. And of course, you can all guess my colleagues from smaller communities do not like this. They would like to have some equitability on state spending regarding their constituents' tax dollars.
Right. Yeah, that's a constant battle, right? Exactly, and it's one that's going to go on as long as the tax structure remains as it is.
And I'm very understanding, and I think you all listening would be understanding that if you're from a small community, a particularly small wealthier community, you're not going to get the same return on dollar than a larger working class community like Quincy does.
Exactly. Is the legislature on break now, Techie?
We are not. We took the weekend off. This weekend, week is no formal session, and we do have the Democratic Convention this week. Speaker has outlined the schedule for the next 2 weeks, and we're projecting out maybe 2 days of formals next week, which may actually interrupt our opportunity to chat next week, but we'll see if we can work around it. And I think we're looking at a projection for another 2 days the week following. But again, this is all tentative schedule. He may make it 3 days, he may make it 1 day. But it's nice that the Speaker's office is giving us at least a couple of weeks heads up to start blocking off time in our schedules to attend formal sessions. It's, as you guys can all imagine, if you get like 12 hours notice, suddenly your whole day is rearranging around a formal session.
Right. Yeah. You have to be there. That's number one priority, I know, when you're an elected official.
Yeah. And it caused a little bit of chaos. So not like we need the full schedule, but we do like to have a little bit of advance notice, even if it's just tentative.
Sure. Can you tell us about your new committee assignment? Well, recent, relatively new committee assignment.
Yeah, I've been appointed to the Conference Committee on Wind and Climate Change. For those who don't know, or maybe I explained this so many times and you may have missed it, when the House and Senate has two bills that are same topic matter, but are not identical, they had to reach a resolution or reconciliation, depending on what word you want to use, to create a single bill. So that's a six-person conference committee composed of three senators, three reps, of which two must be majority party and one member of the minority party. And to approve a conference committee report requires two members of each branch to vote to approve it. So two members of the House, two members of the Senate to approve a conference bill. The chair, Roy from Franklin at Telecommunication Utilities, and the chair, obviously, is the chair of the conference committee. I'm sitting second chair, and Brad Jones from North Reading is sitting as the minority representative. He's also the minority leader. On the other side is Michael Barrett from Lexington. He's the chair of Telecom Utilities and Energy. Cindy Cream, the majority leader from Newton. And Bruce Tarder, actually the minority leader in the Senate, who's from Gloucester. So we held a public meeting, which you can see on the state website, the legislature's website, and some comments about the bill. I chose not to say anything because why? I'm one of those people who don't want to say stuff if there's nothing valuable or add to the conversation. And we have a motion to close public meetings, the conference committee, deliberations. And at this point, we are breaking down the bills, and I'm playing a lot of catch up on this matter. And it's going to eat a lot of time. It's going to eat a lot of time as we close in the session, 2 months remaining. So I'm going to be very, very busy.
Well, good luck with that. You'll need a new pair of glasses by the time you're all said and done.
That is true. I think you're correct. As if my changing prescriptions during COVID as a result of too much screen time has resulted in these new progressive short distance reading glasses. I suspect there'll be another set coming.
A recent interesting bill on granting driver's licenses to quote unquote illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants, if you will.
Yeah, we use the word undocumented immigrants and illegal immigrants, but I mean, let's do a little reminder for folks. You're not illegal until an immigration judge says you're illegal. I know it sounds like a quirky thing, but you and I are not allowed to judge what's illegal and legal. That's the court system's job. So let's get out of the way first. I understand the terminology, but I mean, you don't have an illegally held item until the court says it's a legally held item, because you are not the court and you are not a cop. So, and you're not an immigration cop either. I mean, ICE. So, I mean, there's all these terms to try to oversimplify. We often refer to it as undocumented, meaning is that individuals who do not documentation do identify who they are. That's also been kind of a confusing term, because the way we are structured this bill, which is very different from other states, is that you have to have documentation. So we are requiring that you can get a Massachusetts driver's license if you have a valid foreign passport or you receive a document confirming your identity from a consulate of your country of origin. So no passport and no document confirming country of origin, and you have to take a driving school. You have to get your certificate from a driving school before you take the exam. Most of you may not realize you don't need to go to driving school to take the driving exam. You just show up.
That's right. Yeah. If you already know, if you know the answers to the test, you can pass. Yeah.
Exactly. You survive the driving exam, you're done. So, you know, you still have to apply to do that, get your driver's permit. And these folks have to get the driver's permit to go to driving school. So that is additional cost on them. Demonstrate they have a valid a U.S. passport, not an expired one, a valid one, and or a valid document them showing that they are who they are from U.S. consulate. So who does this leave out? Obviously, anyone without a passport.
Right.
People seeking political asylum but are not here with documents. So I'll give you a simple example. Anybody that's the Falun Gong, for example, which is a religious slash philosophical group, that China has labeled basically enemy of the state, for lack of a better term, cannot go back to the Chinese consulate to get documentation. They are not getting a driver's license. And these are political asylum seekers who are often left undocumented or unverified or not dealt with immigration properly. I've met some of these folks. It's really kind of an interesting quandary because going back to China equals immediate hard labor or potentially death.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can choose your poison, stay here as a person who does not receive legal documents to be here or go back and die. This is not a joke. This is reality. Also, I mean, many folks are very concerned about, you know, large immigration massing from various borders around us. If you're from a war-torn country or a country that's not very wealthy, the odds are not good. You're going to have a passport. And it's like the first thing you think of. You know, conversely, you know, people are coming in, such as Ukrainians and other refugees do have passports.
Yeah.
So they are here under a U.S. program to provide them temporary visas. But it is also feasible these folks could let their visa expire and stay, but the passport must remain valid.
Okay.
And there's some also other quirks to this. So, for example, during COVID, we had legit constituent issues where people who are here legally, their visa expired, application submitted, and I'll be frank about it, the Trump administration was not processing visa renewals. They became instantly undocumented or not valid documents as soon as ICE did not complete their renewal process. So imagine you're hanging here.
For many, many years.
Yeah, and imagine hanging here with no valid document, not because you didn't fill the form or put it in properly, because the U.S. government didn't take action. And guess what? Your driver's license needs to be renewed, and you cannot renew your driver's license.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
This is a legit thing that I had constituent calls on during COVID that I cannot resolve because of federal problems, which, of course, I sent over to the congressman's office, Congressman Lynch's office, to see if they can help them there. Mm. So so this becomes your question. That's another red herring about voter registration. So when we used to stand at supermarkets like me, getting people voter registered to vote, you filled out a card, and anybody would fill out a card. I'll be frank with you. You asked them, like, sure. Now, were they a resident of the city at Stop and Shop? Were they a person that was eligible to vote? Were they 18 and older? I had no idea. Mm-hmm. That being said, those cards went to City Hall. They did the verification process, which can take a few days. And those who were valid to vote got a notice from City Hall. Those that didn't got bumped out.
Right.
There is a system in place long before computers, folks, that we did on paper, because I did this in the rain, in the cold, you know, registering people to vote when I was younger and more spry. And, you know, I had no idea who you were. I didn't sit there and figure out who you were. I just asked people to fill out a registration form. I registered, you know, over 1,000 people. So, you know, this whole thing about, you know, voter fraud, I mean, you could have done this like 25 years ago. I mean, your systems had to be in place to address it. And the Secretary of State's office, Secretary Galvin, assures that there are mechanisms that have always been there continue to be operating properly, as well as the city and town and clerks. So it's kind of like one of those funny things. And I remind folks, some of you may remember, you got your license at 17. Mm-hmm. You couldn't register to vote, but you got a driver's license. So it's like, this, again, misconception that you have to be 18 to get a driver's license. I promise you, people listening, just if they think back hard enough, they were 17.
Oh, yeah. I got my permit at 16 and a half.
I was 17 when I got my license. 16 and a half getting a permit, 17 getting my license. So, you know, that's not valid. And of course, I did mention people who are legally here under visas, and people to work for foreign consulates can get driver's licenses in Massachusetts, and they can't vote either.
Right. So why'd the governor veto it?
Well, he's claiming the fact that it's identification problems, and he doesn't believe there's valid identification issues to demonstrate that who you are. Now, if the IRV can process people's visas, it comes with a passport, it comes with that visa, mm-hmm. I'm pretty confident the IRV can figure this out. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bloody excuse. And those of you who call me for constituent assistance at RMV, it is a miserable state agency for us to deal with on constituent services. We have had a terrible experience. I'm going to just rant now, folks. It's a horrible experience from my standpoint, too, dealing with the RMV, because their folks do not believe in helping people. Yeah. This has nothing to do.
That's right under his jurisdiction.
That's on demand there. I mean, you know, I do my best in my office and my staff trying to help you all out. And we run across the same frustrations that many of you guys do when you call me to try to help you. I'm just going to beat on the governor for a moment. You know, get your house in order. And you had a crappy house for the last 7+ years over there. All right. So, I mean, you know, saying that they can't do something, well, you should go down there and try to do something yourself and see how it goes. Miserable experience, people.
Feel better now, Tacky.
Oh, you guys don't. Oh, God. Constituent services. it's a big part of our lives. And, you know, and it's important for my constituents. And, you know, we want to be helpful.
Right.
But, you know, not all state government is cooperative to the legislature.
So the veto, I mean, there's enough votes to override, yes?
Oh, well, overwhelmingly. Both House and Senate has well over the veto override margin. Other than some members leaving for greener pastures, you know, the vote hasn't really changed throughout this entire process. I believe the vote's going to be next Wednesday. It's going to be, I think it's going to be a simple override, and this will be over with. So, you know, like I said, we rely on the Secretary of State, who has run the most secure and proper elections in the United States, as far as we're concerned, as well as the city town clerks. Some of you now here that I do have actual experience of things like voter registration, did a lot in my younger days back before we had computer sign on. And of course, I was here when we voted to create things like motor voter registration and to try to figure out how to do a secure voter registration online. And of course, you know, we're still dealing with this early voting stuff, as well as same-day registration voting. And as you guys can tell, you know, this people have this perceptions verification process like instantaneous. It's a little bit more involved regarding identification because you want to make sure they get weeded out, which translates to what I call provisional ballots. They have to put ballots aside as they're, and it gets involved. You got to fill a form and everyone speaks English. And doing this myself, you know, not in a election setting, but I have visit election a day every so often to see what's going on. And you know, some people had the wrong registration or they were registered before, but they got bumped off the rolls. They had to get provisional ballots. The clerk had to verify them. I remember talking to Joe Shea quite some time ago about the last time they got people off the rolls because they're supposed to only be there 7 years. Mm. And then had to go through the sweep again through the obituaries, the death certificates to wipe people off the rolls. Oh. You know, let's get new people on the rolls. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not perfect. I won't say it's perfect, but it isn't from the lack of effort to ensure accountability in the system. So, yeah, I know a little bit about this stuff.
Interesting. Let's talk a bit about a bill that has passed regarding equity in the cannabis industry, Tacky.
Yeah, that's in the state Senate now. So we're waiting for it to take action. This is a technical correction to some of the cannabis laws that we've been working on. The voters in the state voted to allow legalization of cannabis after voting for deregulation, as well as medical marijuana, medical cannabis. And Quincy actually did vote in favor of legalization of cannabis. I will not lie. I was very surprised myself. But the voters spoke. So I was on the marijuana committee back in 2017 as we're trying to sort out how to reconcile the voter ballot initiative with current state laws. So things kind of mesh together and create a regulatory system similar to what we did with alcohol and gambling to create some semblance of order. One of the things that was really challenging, and we discover after the fact, is that if you don't have independent money, like you're not rich, rich, it's very hard to open cannabis shop because you do not have access to capital. Because it's still federally banned. On the federal level, the banking system is not giving you loans.
Right. Yeah. A credit union, perhaps, maybe, but yeah.
Not perhaps.
A bank. Yeah.
Yeah. And even state chartered banks were very hesitant to get into it because they're a part of, as we learned through the Ukraine war, SWIFT and other similar systems that allows you to do transactions over state lines, whether it be wire transfers or, I don't know, your ATM card, you know, over state lines, right? So, there's a lot, obviously a lot of hesitation on the banking industry. And then, you know, we also discovered that the community host fee agreements have gotten a little bit out of control. So, I mean, people are now looking for freaking fire trucks and, you know, paving 2 miles of road as part of a cannabis host community in the 3%, you know, part of the 3% collection of fees from the cannabis sales. So we actually added a layer of review process by Cannabis Control Commission to actually take a little peek at this stuff to approve these local host committee agreements to ensure that the non-monetary components are tied to something that actually involves infrastructure impact of them being where they are, which can include things like substance abuse treatment funding. We also want these agreements to be definitive. None of this floating stuff. Apparently some towns were floating these, like, you know, open-ended agreements. And, you know, we want the Cannabis Control Commission to basically, you know, lock down that the agreement is definitive. It is black and white. The parties do not have vagueness they can go to court on or threaten to close you over a vague issue that the state of town may want to have. So, you know, we call it kind of a social justice thing, but reality is trying to adjust the current law to reflect the economic reality of the cannabis industry, who's been locked out, that would like an opportunity to get in, what for reasons why. And we actually created a trust fund, by the way. That's a solution to take a part of all cannabis sales, put to a trust fund to help provide capital for a small business who are looking to have cannabis shop. But like I said, it's still in the state senate, so don't go running right away after the Cannabis Control Commission looking for this money yet. Okay. The state has yet to act on this. And even then, it's going to take time for the state to collect money from the existing cannabis industry to put in a trust fund.
Yeah.
So do not go running to the Cannabis Control Commission just yet, folks.
But I mean, you need at least $250,000 right now to get up and running.
Yeah, just get the basics down, because it's a very secure facility. Those who actually visit Cannabis Shop knows it's like visiting a bank plus extra security. And but also acquisition of products very expensive because the product has to be grown inside Massachusetts.
Okay, so stay tuned to that one. Think it'll be done by the end of this session?
We are hopeful. I mean, obviously, I said there's 2 months left. Excuse me, 2 months left. And we have a lot on the plate, as you guys have on a conference committee that's going to consume a lot of my time, as well as, you know, pushing out not the most, you know, it's called sexy and newsworthy bills. But, you know, we continue to push out much smaller bills, whether it be home petitions or technical changes to the law, whether it be informal or formal sessions. And, of course, we still have the Econ Dev Bond Bill. We have the, obviously, the main budget that's in conference committee. We're going to have another supplemental budget. We're going to have a transportation bond bill. We're working on we have a capital bond bill that we just passed that's sitting in the Senate. So there's a lot. There's a lot on the plate still.
Yeah. Sounds like Senator Keenan's pretty busy right now, too.
Oh, yeah. John's got a lot going on. He's got a lot going on also, particularly in the housing front.
Yeah. Revenge porn, Tacky.
Yeah. For those who don't know, the world has changed in how you can abuse a partner. The type of emotional and reputational abuse has changed. So people have seen in the news a lot about teenagers sharing explicit photos. Let's be nice. Explicit photos of each other, sometimes without consent. And, you know, consenting adults can do what consenting adults should do, right? I have no problem with that. But teenagers performing this can lead to problems, as you guys can imagine, as some of you probably lived it. And if it's non-consensual, you know, it's a criminal act. In the current law, you treat it like a sex offender, or you got nothing at all. So we had to create a new area of law to address teenagers in particular, you know, under age majority criminal offenses, to give the DAs the option to recommend diversion programs to teach them, hey, this is a problem here, why? And, you know, try to help the victims also through the DA's office. Or on the other side, we create a higher penalty as a fine associated with doing these kind of acts. I think, I'm trying to remember, I think it's $5,000, I think, or is it $1,000? We elevated the fine. The other one, among adults, is where you put explicit images of the other individual, other person, and it's either on the internet or through texting, but often more not on internet, where they're nude or partially nude, and sometimes they're involving sex acts put on popular websites that do not have adult filters,
right.
Whether it be commercial or non-commercial ones. And as you all know, you put it on the internet, particularly stuff like this, you know, it flies through. And some of you don't remember way back, if you're old enough, you know, the Pamela Anderson sex tape, right? And it was Mick Jagger, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's, people remember Pamela Anderson.
Right, yeah.
They sometimes forget Mick Jagger sometimes. And that was on VHS before the internet. And that thing moved like wildfire, right? Long before the internet. It was just someone just, you know, copying a lot of VHS tapes and just started giving it around the country. And people made a copy and copy. So imagine that magnitude, like a bazillion times to the internet on a global level. So we create a new restraining order opportunities for victims against the perpetrator. We issue a new felony, as well as increased penalties for these type of acts. The challenge, of course, is that how to get it off the internet. The best you can do is get the perpetrator to take it off, but it's been downloaded and reshared. It's far too late.
And once it's on, it's on forever. Yeah.
Yeah. You can download stuff that people put on and re-up it someplace else. And some of these, almost all these companies that provide this type of internet streaming services and upload, download videos are off the U.S. shores. And that's just, I'm sorry to say, reality. So
it is. I mean, it's as simple as all you have to do is just rename the video and you won't be able to find it.
Yeah. And some of these may have been consensual at the time.
Right.
Some of this may be just a hidden camera in the room.
Right.
You didn't know. So, I mean, I, you know, look, you can do what you want in your bedroom, but just be aware that, you know, there's sometimes consequences for what you perceive at the time of kind of a fun thing to do. And
yeah,
I don't have a problem with that, obviously. But, you know, if the other person abuses your trust, this becomes really problematic for the individual that's the victim.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an issue now that with a lot of these video doorbells, I know that, you know, I think it's probably going to end up in state or federal court.
Yeah, again, it's a tricky law to apply. The restraining order is actually pretty important because you need three separate incidents that are not the same to get a restraining order. They're designed a domestic violence issue.
Okay.
Domestic violence issue only requires one incident. So we changed this around and put that in a category of more domestic violence.
Okay.
Also in the state Senate, we're waiting for the state Senate to take action. We think, you know, we set up, you know, good penalties as well as victim protection. We fully acknowledge that we are unable to do 100% protection. We do acknowledge that, you know, once these things are offshore internet services, there's nothing I can do for you, but, right. You know, go after the perpetrator is the best we can do. And, you know, I don't know what to say, but, you know, again, your bedroom's your bedroom. I have no problems. Just be, you know, conscious of these things. And we want to chase after people who betray the other's trust.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully it will be a deterrent, you know, for some, if it does pass, to think.
No, people are stupid. They're just going to do it. You know, deterrence only works if we know the consequences.
Yeah, that's true. The police say all the time, it's a good thing the criminals aren't too smart.
The smart ones know how to do the rotating to our courthouses. And I think I've seen police officers, defense, and prosecution attorneys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Criminal law class actually had an ADA and kind of explained the real world of how this works. And, you know, majority of criminals are not bright. We'll be honest. The ones that are the ones that are dangerous.
Yeah, that's very true. Tacky, can you explain a little bit about this ballot question regarding ride sharing and what it all involves? We've seen all the ads on the television.
I know. Yeah. You need to get to an expert on this thing. because my ability to explain this is not very good.
Well, it's a start at least.
We're going to try this again. We did this like 4 weeks ago, I think.
Yes.
All right. Independent contractor law is a three-pronged test where you work for another employer under contract where you are not treated like an employee, you're not enriching the employer as if you're an employee, and you're able to take work that is not the current, beyond the current contractor E, the contractee, unless your contract says otherwise. And so, for example, if you're a landscaper, you have a contract for you and me. You can, I want your landscape every Wednesday. You're a small outfit, not uncommon. You come every Wednesday at 10 a.m., do 1 year hour. I pay you on a consistent basis. But you can go next door and do theirs Wednesday at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Obviously, at the same time, you can't do that because you're only one person. You can't. But obviously, you have a big shop. You can be, you know, multiple locations at the same time.
Yeah.
However, my contract says I want you here all week, all the time, nonstop. Obviously, you cannot work anywhere else, right? But that's between you and the contractee, and the contractor has to make those decisions. What does it mean by enrichment of employment? Well, the contractor actually does work that does not always engage in the actual business that the person is actually doing. So, for example, if you're doing an awning adjustment on a building owned by a business, yeah, it enriches the business because the awning is improved, customer safety, appearance, but it's not really enriching it, right? You're not an employee selling goods or providing services in the shop itself. You're providing a secondary benefit that has nothing really to do with the shop inside.
Yep.
So, but if you're working in the shop doing goods and retail on a contract for X number of hours for X number of time, but what you're really doing at the end is enriching the employer as if you're an employee but receiving no other benefits, then you become an employee. You can see where the real kind of like nuances are now.
Yeah.
You have these really strange razor thin lines, these thread sized lines trying to figure out whether or not you fall over and under.
Right.
To become an employee that actually enriches the employer as an employee. And what does enrichment mean is that your work actually makes the employer money or improves the employer's business, that as if you were an employee, that means you're not really a contractor.
Okay. All right. I see that.
It sounds weird when I say it, but it's a case by case basis. This is not a, you know, that's that and that's that. I mean, when it goes to court, it's all fact-based. The entire facts of the case has to be revealed. And this is the gray spot that everyone can't figure out.
So these ride-sharing companies are looking to make the drivers contractors?
Well, they are already kind of. So now we have a new thing called, you know, platforms, right?
Yeah.
Uber and Lyft and Uber Eats and DoorDash are no different from Match.com.
Mm-hmm.
They really are not. They're basically the same as a dating service. Why? You're matching up at one entity with another entity to do business.
Yep.
So Dash.com is pretty straightforward, right? You're matching the restaurant and the consumer, and you're just the one in the middle that provides a platform for communication and delivery of service between the two.
Yep.
You don't work for both the for the customer, and you actually also work for the business. You get a fee out of it.
Okay.
So you go dating services. It sounds like a dating service, right?
Yeah.
You're looking for a date. The other person looking for a date, paying Match.com to match a date.
Yeah.
In this case, Match.com is the facilitator. The question is that person that works as a contractor for DoorDash, or that person sitting behind the computer in Match.com, is working for as a contractor, or is actually working for the consumer and the retailer?
So who pays the fee to the platform?
The fees are paid by the restaurant, and sometimes, and also often by the consumer.
So
the platform gets the money, and that money is then given to the contractor.
Okay.
So right.
How does the platform make money?
They get a cut.
Okay. Is that the same with these ride sharing services?
Yeah. Yeah. The restaurant that went, guys, if you want to help your restaurants out, please try to do pickup as often as possible, because Uber and DoorDash and these guys take up to 20% of the price of the meal.
Wow. Okay.
I resist using those services. Plus, they also charge you like a crazy ass fee on the other side. Okay. I mean, it's insane. When you actually look at it, it's like, this is a lot of money.
Yeah, 20%. Yeah.
ride sharing, again, similar idea, but slightly different. You as a driver needs a job. You put yourself out there like a want ad, and you can pick and choose which customers you want. Let's ignore the discrimination issue for a moment, but you can pick and choose the consumers you want using the Uber or Lyft platform as the mechanism by which you can announce your services.
Mm-hmm.
Uber gets paid by the consumer, who the Uber then pays you as the contractor. The driver is a sets of hours, chooses the customers, has a valid contract with them, can sometimes, I believe, all of them allows you to work for other ride sharing services, yep. Does not prohibit you from having a day job, does not prohibit you a day job, yep. Prohibits you from other types of employment, or whether it be employer W-2 or a private, mm-hmm. A private business or your own business. You can do this as part. There's no prohibition of doing that. And it's when you see that, sounds like an independent contractor. Because it's such hours, you can still do whatever you want, right, to make money. The quirky part of this is that, Uber's rating system of keeping you employed, obviously, is not a violation of their code and conduct policy, which is contractual, which is not unusual in contract. Code and conduct is not unusual in a person's contract. If you are, like, attacking people, the contract's nullified.
Right.
Same, but it requires consumers to rate. So it's like, what, 4.3 is the minimum, or 4.7?
Yeah.
Now you get cut off, your contract gets cut off, and you're no longer working for Uber, and which becomes a competitive issue of Uber and other ride shares. So the argument is, are they employees? And here's the enrichment argument, right? Is the third prong of the test met? They're not prohibited from working other folks. There is a contract on terms of arrangement. However, a contract does not have termination date. It's kind of an open-ended contract based on conditions of compliance. Contracts normally have execution end dates. This one does not. And are you enriching the employer? And the question is, who is the employer?
Hmm.
Person seeking your services or Uber, Lyft?
Yeah.
Because the enrichment for the consumer is that you got your ride. You've been enriched. You're paying for service. You receive benefit. But Uber and Lyft gets a fee for that component.
Mm-hmm.
So Uber and Lyft can always argue they're more like an employment placement company, where they get a fee from the employer, from the consumer or the employer, to get placements and temp workers. And they get paid for that, and temp worker then goes to wherever they need to go.
Really, it's both.
It's really both. And this is where it gets Uber and Lyft is very confusing, because modern independent contract law and case law has a hard time getting its head around this specific pattern.
So what would this ballot question do?
Ballot question basically allows Uber and Lyft to dictate the terms of independent contractor for a narrow section regarding these kind of drivers. But it's a corporate ballot question.
Okay.
No big surprise, folks. It benefits the corporation.
Well, right. Yeah, it turns the drivers into their, their employees, so they can dictate their work rules.
Yeah, here's the irony, right? They want to dictate what the independent contractor is for the employees, or employees in this class.
Yeah.
But don't want to make employees. But we're going to dictate what they do through.
So they don't want to pay them any benefits. They just want to tell them what to do.
Yeah, so I'm not going to get into the nuances of the bill, because it's way confusing.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you the big policy look at this issue. If you vote no, everything's status quo. The Uber drivers are going to continue to do what they're going to do. They're going to still have this vagueness in the independent contract law about what they really are. A lawsuit's going to have to occur to let the courts look at the fact pattern, like all the other independent contractor lawsuits, to figure out what's what, and then let it sort it out from there.
Hmm. Okay.
We can do this, and it's still going to go to court about whether or not this is an employee law, independent contract law. And this applies to, like, other types of gig workers. So,
right.
For example, California had a much more broad-based law on this. It actually hurts the entertainment industry.
Oh, really?
Musicians, photographers, and all types of entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
They're all temporary employees or they're contractors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see that. Yeah. Okay.
Because you could work multiple venues as a musician.
Sure. Photographer. Yeah. Okay.
There's some really odd unintended consequences here. Because some of these also can use platforms to get their gig, so to speak.
Right. Okay. Thanks for clearing that up, Jackie.
Yeah, I don't think I made it much more clearer. It is extremely confusing. I'm not going to lie to you. This is not my expertise. But again, of the three-pronged test, the key part is whether or not you're enriching the employer.
Yeah, well, I can see why the drivers would be opposed to that.
Yeah, because drivers don't want to find themselves tethered to an employee.
Right.
Because you know for a fact you're going there with no vacation time, you know, you don't actually control all the rates. You are subject to code of conduct. There's no sick leave. There's no health care. But you know that going into this.
Right. No, right. Exactly. It's called, you know, the quote unquote side hustle. It's the why they do it the way it's set up now is because it's the independence and the freedom to do what they want when they want.
Yeah. Nationally, there's been movements around trying to, you know, make them employees of Uber.
Yeah.
But even cab drivers are independent contractors sometimes because they own their own medallions.
That's right. Which is very expensive, actually. Yeah.
Extraordinarily expensive. Cab drive, people don't realize the damage they've done to the cab industry through rideshare. But, you know, it is where he is today, right? Same thing to Airbnbs, which again, same category, right? You know, you got two people who matched up like a dating opportunity, right? So, but again, the difference here is that the platform creates a forum by which people seeking work and try to hook up with someone who's looking for that work to be completed.
Yep.
So you've got these like two things they're trying to find a place, but you need a way to get to them, right? Like
middleman, yeah.
Angelus, another example, right? A platform that connects a contractor to mm-hmm. to someone seeking said contractor to try to figure out how to make it happen. So, yeah, as you can tell, this is all of us are using these new technologies. Not as simplified as I think people make it out to be.
Yeah. Well, it's I always have to remember there are real people behind all of these, you know, electronic inventions.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you how to vote. I'm just doing my best to kind of lay it out. The legislature took no action on any ballot initiatives. This session, they're all now collecting their questions. All these guys are using contractors using third party services,
right?
Who using contractors? This is the irony. They're using third party businesses who hire contractors to get signatures for them to put it in the ballot. This is the irony of the whole thing.
Right.
Independent contractor law, hiring companies to hire contractors to get the stuff in the ballot. So just to put that out there, folks, to let y'all know, just saying they get paid per signature. And this is the world we live in. The days of like massive volunteer collection gathering is not as much as it used to be.
Right. Yeah. It's all been corporatized, as it were. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All righty. What's that? Anything else we should look for in June coming up, Jackie?
Well, it's like I said, we're short on time. It always feels like we're short on time. And we're going to be very active and very busy through this next 8-week period. And events have picked up. Obviously, Quincy Asian Resources is having their annual banquet outside of AAIP month. But again, you know, it takes 6-8, sometimes 10 plus weeks, you know, depending who you are, to get these events off the ground. I know Mad Community Health Center is having their event. So if you like you want to help them out, go ahead. Quincy Pride is this Sunday at Patton Field. We also have the Caddy Park Memorial. That if you want to see us at 11 o'clock on Quincy Shore Drive at Caddy Park, Firefighter Memorial and Police Memorials this month. This coming Sunday is Firefighter Memorial as well as New Cemetery. I think it's like 8:45-ish.
It's Police Memorial first.
Sorry, Police Memorial first. The weekend after is Fire. They're back to back. Same time, Walson Cemetery, but back to back on Sundays. Dragon Boat Festival, also two Sundays from now.
Well, what's that?
Well, the Dragon Boat Festival is what it sounds like. It's long boats with dragon decor.
Oh.
It's actually a Hong Kong event. And Boston has the longest running Dragon Boat event outside of Hong Kong.
Oh, I wasn't aware.
Yeah, it's a Guangdong, Guangzhou event, that part of the region of China. So it's on to Charles. It's going to be a lot of tents, food trucks, musicians, entertainers. A lot of corporations do field teams to compete in this, a lot of pride on the line here. And those who do rowing, this is serious rowing.
Oh, right?
Okay. It's long boats. You got 10 or so people. There's a drum involved with pacing. I mean, it's legit competition.
Oh.
And it's a fun day for all. And that's two Sundays from, not this Sunday, but a Sunday following.
Okay.
its first time in 2 years that's going to be up and running. So yeah, June has a lot of events involved. I see Father Days and Father's Day and Juneteenth.
Yes.
Juneteenth this year, I believe, is June 19th. And the holiday, you all get a holiday in June, which is June 20th on Monday. And this weekend is Democratic State Committee Convention. So right now, the one that to look out for, if you guys are watching the news, the Lieutenant Governor's race, there's five of them. You need 15% of the delegates to get you on the ballot. The math is kind of tough at that point with five people involved. It'll be interesting if anyone gets bumped out. I expect all the other candidates for all the other positions to get on the ballot to get to 50% fairly easily, in my opinion. That would be Secretary Galvin's and what's her name? Tastasia. Ugh, names are now leaving me. But you know, there's two for Secretary of State, three for Attorney General, five for Lieutenant Governor, and two for Governor, and two for Auditor. So anyone that's like twos and three people should be able to 15%, unless you just did like no work.
Right.
Five against 50, you know, trying to get 50% against five. Not everyone's going to equal amount, five against 100. This could get hairy for some of the folks, particularly if any of the folks are able to cross the 30% barrier.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of Lieutenant Governor, she will be the Grand Marshal of the Quincy Flag Day Parade this year.
Yeah. We've had the governor come visit before, as well as U.S. senators. And this year we have the privilege of the Lieutenant Governor spending some time with us at the Flag Day Parade. And, you know, as we know, the mayor has a good, very good relationship with the governor's office. And the end of the Baker administration, you know, it's a great thing to do as an appreciation to the administration for a lot of things they've done. I mean, I'll be honest about this part of the administration. I know the frustrating constituent services, but they have actually done a lot of financial assistance to the city. Mm-hmm. A lot of programs that help the city government out a lot. But I also like to remind you folks, you know, we do have the Speaker of the House in Quincy and a very strong regional Quincy delegation, of which almost all of us are in House leadership. And John has settled himself very well in the state Senate as a major player in the state Senate. So, you know, I'm not shy saying the math seems very good for Maura Healey, knowing there's no guarantees. And, you know, it's a strong Democratic delegation with a Democratic governor is actually a very positive thing, especially when the head of your delegation is the Speaker of the House. So not like I'm plugging for re-election, folks, because the election cycle, but there is a practicality to this business, to be perfectly frank, and is a relationship building job.
Sure. How do we get a hold of you, Techie?
My office is staffed. We're running skeleton staff, 617-722-2370. That's a phone number change, 722-2370. We've had more COVID notifications this week at the State House. I think we have had some 30 plus just in the month of May.
Wow.
There's only 500 employees with legislators included. So... I'm still astonishing caution. We do have a rotating staff to ensure that I do not have to quarantine everyone simultaneously. Okay. Because even when you do remote work, if you're at home and you're running a fever, you're not going to remote work.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. And I've talked to folks with COVID that's catching it now and there. It can be worse than the flu that I had with some folks. You can always email at tacky.chan@mhealth.gov. I'm getting a lot of email, my conference committee stuff, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But I do sort through and read my email and I read my junk mail box and I read the focus section and the other focus section in my email. So, you know, even though you don't hear from me, I have read your stuff. And again, constituent services come first. So need help, we're going to do it the best we can. You know, tacky.chan.org, again, is a website we use strictly for phone numbers and other referrals that if you're looking for a number or service that may help you out and save your time. And a state representative, Tacky Chan, Facebook. And of course, at Tacky Chan Twitter. You know, we do have resources and notifications and my public hearings and such on those sites. So if you want to see me finding what I'm having for dinner on social media, it ain't going to happen. You have seen me with bubble tea a lot during May as part of Shop AIP month. That's probably the extent you're going to see me with food in front of me on social media. But for example, I mean, I had a dinner of the Korean consulate in May, had an opportunity to catch up on Korean community issues, as well as Korean foreign affairs and relationship between the U.S. Korea and also Korea of other Prostor, which you can discuss another day. Because you know, I like my international affairs stuff as well. It's part of this job. Very educational. So I mean, things like that, you can see I've been floating around both, you know, at home, you know, and also things that I do a little more beyond just on the home front. It's the allergy season, as you can all hear. But definitely, those of you who know have cars coated in green, it gets to my throat too.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be over soon if there are a lot of folks who are suffering, I know. All right, Tacky, appreciate it. Maybe we'll catch up at the high school graduations next week. If not, we'll touch base sometime soon.
No, absolutely. We will touch base hopefully next week. At least the calendar is kind of wacky, but again, we always do our best to accommodate Joe. And these next 2 months are going to be extremely busy.
All right. Until then, be well.
Be well, Joe, and I'll see you soon.